you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Steve Stone, White Sox TV analyst.
And the pitcher, a 12-game winner already this year, Steve Stone.
Former American League Cy Young Award winner. Over four decades of excellence in the booth. No one breaks down baseball like Stoney.
I mean, I had heard tell that there was a time in baseball where you actually got signals from the catcher and they threw the ball without a pitch count.
Really?
Yeah.
Steve Stone with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Marshall Harris sitting in for David this morning, and we're delighted to welcome in Steve Stone. Steve Stone joins us on The Score Hotline. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Pretty good, Mully. How are you, Marshall?
Oh, great. We're great, I think.
Yeah, we're doing okay. Fine. I said earlier, I'm delighted for Dylan Cease. It was fun to see him throw a no-hitter. You know, you always have a moment in a game like that where some weird play helps you, and there was that Xander Bogaerts ball pops out of his mitt and it's caught. And, you know, it was just super cool to see him get the no-hitter. And we don't see many no-hitters these days, Steve, only the second one in Major League Baseball. And, you know, a good guy, you know, you maybe a hint of jealousy, I think, both sides of town, because he used to be a Cub at one point and then obviously a great pitcher with the White Sox. But it was just good to see him succeed in that fashion.
The one thing that Dylan does bring to the mound with him on a daily basis is no-hit stuff. That's not a debatable issue. And San Diego made a good trade, which so far looks pretty good for both sides. Right. I mean, Cease is a top of the rotation starter. That, you know, matters how deep your rotation is, but he's going to be probably one or two with just about everybody. So for them, it worked out pretty well. And as far as the Sox are concerned, they got back a good portion of the future, and now we'll have to see beyond Thorpe just how the others develop.
Speaking of Thorpe, I've been not mesmerized, but kind of mesmerized watching him pitch and just like the way he goes about his business. Are you surprised at how much success he has had here as a rookie?
No, because of his command. I mean, most likely he's going to throw the ball around the plate. Even when he misses, he doesn't miss by much. And plus he has a spectacular changeup. And if you have one of those, and if you don't tip it, it's going to be really tough to hit, because hitters just, they don't pick up the lack of spin right away. It's a different type of spin coming off his hands the way he throws his changeup and just what everybody else does. So it's surprising in that he is captivating these major league hitters a lot sooner than I thought he would. However, looking at his stuff the first few times he pitched, I realized that he's got something. He's got the ability, regardless of what the pressure situation is, he has the ability to continue to throw strikes with all of his pitches. And I think you're seeing what the Sox saw in him when they traded for him.
Steve, obviously the trade deadline is right around the corner now, and we are kind of waiting with bated breath as to what will happen. We know that the White Sox are one of the teams that is trading. We were talking about what we heard from John Heyman yesterday, and John is a regular on the show and does a great job. And he apparently reported that Garrett Crochet's representatives have told teams that the pitcher will not pitch in the playoffs without an extension, which would seemingly damage his trade value. We'll find out if that is the case. But if you were planning on trading for Garrett Crochet, how much would it impact what you wanted to do when you find out that he says he's not going to the bullpen, that he wants to finish the year in the rotation, and if he's going to be pitching in October, he's going to need a contract extension?
Well, I mean, I've heard all that, and Because he doesn't have a no trade, because he's not a 10-5 year man, because he doesn't have that many years in the game, and this is his first year starting. Realistically, he has no ability to dictate terms of anything. However, that being said, it still is his arm, and he has a deciding vote. And if you are looking to him, you're probably going to be a team that's either pretty much locked into a playoff spot or one, for instance, in the National League, one of six teams that are sitting right there in the wild card race. You certainly want him to pitch in October. So the question comes down then, number one, when he talks about an extension, he's got 2+ years left. How long is that extension? That's going to come into play. How much is that extension for? That's going to come into play. And then, of course, what exactly is a team willing to give up for a guy that has a couple of question marks? Now, selfishly, because I know Garrett, I would like to see the White Sox keep him. Again, that's selfishly, and I think a lot of fans feel the same way. However, the Sox are in a position where they need to add at many positions, and they need talent, they need volume as far as getting players back in return, and then you sit and you measure it. This is a tough time for all GMs, but this year especially, it comes down very much to a GM's division because you've got more teams eligible for the wild card at this point than you seem to ever have, which means there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to be buyers, which means that five teams that are completely eliminated from postseason, they're going to be the sellers. And everybody's going to be looking over their organization, what the talent is at the major leagues, what it's going to cost me in both dollars and in prospects, and then they'll figure out what to do. But there's a lot of teams searching. There's not that many teams that are completely out of this where they pretty much say, what am I bid? But the White Sox are one of those teams.
Trade deadline coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch.
It's interesting because I was just reading about Luis Robert Jr., right, Steve? And the fact that when he's healthy and he's going well, he's as good as anybody in the outfield, and there's teams who need an outfielder. But it seems like there's a big hang-up on that health issue. I mean, the best ability, of course, availability. And do you think that teams would be willing to take a risk on Luis Robert Jr. that the White Sox could get what they want for him?
Well, the easy answer is yes to the first part. You know, he's as far as losing a whole lot of value, that's a concern. When you trade for somebody who has been injured quite a bit, well, it's always a concern. However, last year, the man hit 38 home runs, drove in 80, and played most of the time. Now, this year, he had an early injury, which he's just now starting to look like he's coming back and getting the rhythm and the timing. So if you're looking to make a deal, you're probably seeing the best of Luis Robert vintage 2024 at this point. Then the question becomes, like every other trade you either anticipate or you look at or you're contemplating, you say to yourself what it's going to cost you in prospects. And then there's a couple of $20 million options at the end of Luis's hold. So you have him, if you want to, you have him quite some time for $20 million for a guy who can play as well as he did. I know it sounds strange to other people because it sounds strange to me. I mean, when you're saying $20 million, well, that's kind of a value for a guy who's, you know, top five prospect in baseball. So as far as that's concerned, I think that that's always a condition with which you're going to make your deal. What is it going to cost you in players? What's it going to cost you in dollars? And how long do I have this guy? I think Luis Robert has enormous talent, and you're right. I mean, he does get injured quite a bit. However, perhaps most of those injuries are behind him. And, you know, this is, again, a very valuable guy, and the Sox have a few of those. But, you know, when I'm looking at everything, there's conditions with Garrett Crochet. There's concerns with Luis Robert. There's other teams that maybe have gone in a different direction, and it doesn't preclude Seattle, who just got Randy Arozarena. It doesn't preclude them from going after Luis Robert, which has been their stated intention. So you look at everything that's on the table, everything that's available, and then you make your decisions. And this is not a slam dunk for anybody. For any of these prospects or any of these players that come over from other places, you never know how they're going to do. You think you got a pretty good idea, but that's why you make the trade. You get a whole lot of tomorrow for a whole lot of today, and that's the way teams that are not going to make the playoffs have to have to they have to be in that mind frame, and that's what Chris Getz is going through now.
Steve, it's interesting because, you know, I mean, I would be delighted as a Sox fan if Garrett Crochet were to stay with the team, if Luis Robert wasn't traded. But I understand there are a lot of trades to be made, and there are a lot of people that are rumored to be traded. Eric Fetty should bring in a pretty good turn of prospects. We mentioned Tommy Pham, Paul DeJong. You know, this is all going down Tuesday at 5 o'clock. How tight will all this be if indeed we're talking about, you know, dealing with various teams on some of these days? When you get beyond like four trades, I got to imagine that's a lot of calendar time.
Well, there is, but, you know, Sox have an advantage because when they did move Dylan Cease, they looked at just about everybody else's farm system. They know the farm systems backwards and forwards, and that's how you complete a trade, is getting maybe one of those gems who's not highly thought of at this time, but you see some potential for development, then you get them in return. And, you know, that's what makes this time of year so interesting and so exciting, because although, I mean, Arozarena is a very good player, this might kick off a really heavy trade season. I know we don't have that much time left, but so far everybody's been very quiet until this trade with the Mariners came out. And, you know, we'll see who follows, but I'm sure there's a lot more. The question for a lot of teams looking for power is, Guerrero going to be traded from the Blue Jays? I mean, nobody at this point really knows that, but they do know that there's some bats, there's certain guys that are going to be out there and available. But understand something, with scarcity comes very expensive times. And if there's very few power hitting outfielders, and you happen to have one, well, that's pretty good for you because the cost goes up. And I will agree with you, Mully, in that the guy to me that I would go after, which doesn't have many concerns, is one Eric Fetty, who not only you control through this year, but you control through next year at $7.5 million. That is a bargain basement rate for a starting pitcher who's going to be a two or three wherever he goes. And if you look at his numbers, except for strikeouts, he is almost identical to Garrett Crochet. I mean, Eric Fetty has had a really remarkable year for a team that is 51 games under 500. So he would be the guy that I would concentrate on. Not that he won't cost you a lot, because he will. He's just going to cost you a whole lot less than Garrett Crochet, and you might not have as many concerns.
Steve, how when you look at a team that's lost 11 in a row and you're kind of looking at post-trade deadline, if some of these guys are moved, and yes, it seems like another wave of youth might be on the way up, are there any particular players that you're looking at in the minor leagues that you're excited to see back half of the season here?
Oh, at this point, at 51 under, I'm pretty much excited to see just about everybody is brought to the team. You know, you want to bring in guys who have passed away recently? Bring them in. That's not a problem. You know, we'll deal with it here. I mean, obviously, it doesn't get a whole lot worse than it's been. However, there have been some bright spots that you wouldn't have necessarily seen if the year had gone differently. And I'm thinking of Thorpe, and I'm thinking of Cannon. Those are two guys look to me like they're going to be right in the middle of the starting rotation going forward. Then you have to decide exactly what's going to happen with Crochet. I'm pretty sure Fetty's going to be traded. That being said, there's a lot of teams I'm sure very interested in his skills, because pitching and power hitting from either side of the plate is at a premium. And with all the teams that are in it, they're not going to want to move their guys that have kept them in this wild card race or the division race. But the teams that are also Rans, they're pretty much saying, I got an open portfolio, take a look, see what you like. And that's kind of what at least five teams are in. And there's probably some more that are sitting on the cusp, four to five and a half games back in the wild card. Those are teams having to make decisions. And the Cubs happen to be one of them. They got to figure out if they're buyers or sellers or exactly what's going to happen. But there's a number of teams that are sitting right there. And the question is, can they get back in it? Will their evaluators believe they can get back in it? Because if not, then they become sellers also.
We were talking about this idea that the Sox could be the losingest season ever, worse than the The Mets did.
No, Cleveland Spiders, my friend.
When was 20 that?
And 20 and 134
okay.
In 1899.
All right. Thank God we have the Spiders.
So we're going to say the modern era then, 1900
plus?
They've
flown by the Spiders. Yeah, they've flown by the Spiders at this point.
But I guess when that whole conversation comes up, whenever we talk about where this is going to wind up or how it will end up, I think the thing that I underestimated just watching the games, and we're watching them together, Steve. I'm still watching them with you. I did not take into account that as you are losing games, that takes a toll on your psyche as well. In other words, when you're seeing a team losing one-run games and it's happening as often as it's happening, you keep thinking, oh, no, like this, now they're in this losing mode. And we talk about an 11-game losing streak or whatever. There were different games in there that they could have won, and it didn't happen. And so you're left wondering what the toll of that takes on the psyche of a team, if that's not getting too goofy.
No, and I understand it. Look, it's difficult to lose, and you got to take something into consideration. These guys who are currently wearing Major League uniforms, they're the best of the best in the world. They have pretty much dominated every level that they've been at. If they hadn't have done that, they probably wouldn't be in the major league. So you have to understand how good these guys really are. Now, there's three stages of development for players, Mully. One is when you sign a contract, you have to be taught how to play professional baseball because it's completely different than anything else you've experienced. That's the first part. Learn how to play professional baseball. Then you get the guy and you bring him up to the major leagues, and you have to teach him how to play major league baseball. That's the second step. So you've taught him how to play professional baseball. You've taught him how to play major league baseball. And the third and final leg of this trilogy is learning how to play winning baseball. And that's something that has eluded the Sox to this point. There's a lack of talent, certainly, and we've seen the inability to cut down base stealers is getting to be alarming, and it's not on the catchers. It's on the pitchers, not looking at the base paths. I've seen so many guys get running starts this year. I've never seen anything like it before. And one of the reasons is a lot of the Sox pitchers don't exactly look at the base runners as they're taking a lead. Because if you were looking at him and he takes off, it's an easy step off and throw him out. It's not happening. It was a double steal that figured prominently in the Texas series. And this stuff continues to happen. We're 105 games in this season. I can't understand why teams are still running us out of the ballpark, and that's been one of the problems, something to be addressed, certainly. And so there's a lot of things that have to be done, but teaching young guys how to play winning baseball, how to play selfless baseball, how to hit to the right side when there's a runner at second and nobody out, get that man over. The Sox, on an alarming basis, have put runners at second and third with nobody out, and they don't score them. Or they have a runner at second and nobody out, and he doesn't move from second. This is fundamental offensive execution. That's something that this team is going to have to learn. And this doesn't have to be a long project because there's some real bright spots on the horizon. And, we're going to start seeing them now. Baldwin was brought up. But the stars have been starting pitching because starting pitching has been enough. If you take starting pitching and then make everything around it better, then you've got yourself a team that's probably knocking at the door of 500 because starting pitching has been just about as good as anybody since June 7th. And so that is a bright spot. Now you have to build around that, and you see who you wind up with at the end of this trade deadline because Tuesday evening is going to be it, and we'll see how many guys get on the phone. I think you'll see things starting to loosen up, probably starting today.
It's tough, Steve, just because you look at the schedule and you're like, they're playing now, the White Sox, teams who are fighting for something. And that's kind of the problem. Not that anyone would let up anyway, but like the Mariners are in town. Then it's the Royals. These are teams that are fighting for playoff spots.
Mm. Yes. But that is the fun part of having a horrific season because really the only thing you have left is to play spoiler. So when you're playing a team that is struggling like you're struggling and there's nobody struggling quite as much as the Sox are. But when you're playing teams that are going to finish up the track, there's not a whole lot of, hey, let's go get them tonight kind of thing. But when you do play teams that are trying to get to the postseason. The only fun there is at that point is playing the spoiler, and that's what the Sox have left. So we'll see after Tuesday who they have to spoil with.
Great stuff, Steve. Thank you, buddy. Great talking to you, as always.
Well, thanks, guys. Look, have a good rest of the show. And, you know, I took the 7 days off for the first seven games, and I feel like the guy who's picking up that helicopter ride out to the Titanic just before the iceberg.
Oh,
so we'll see what happens, but I am going to be back, and I am looking forward to watching a team in Seattle that is going to make some more moves, and they're knocking at the door. They're right there. They're a game back. They're a game back of the Astros, and the Astros story has been remarkable. So have a good show, and I'll talk to you guys down the road.
Thanks a ton, Steve. That is Steve Stone. You're listening to Mully and Haw. We've got Marshall Harris, and we are on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Player from Dream Team that you think your game resembles?
Yeah, I know who's on the team. Michael Jordan.
I'm a Celtic. People are like this. I'm going to say Larry Bird.
Chris Mullin. We're two great shooters.
I wouldn't compare myself to any of those guys, but I have a lot of respect for them.
No.
Was that Ant? Yeah, I love him. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw. We've got Marshall Harris this morning, and we got some people want to check in with some baseball thoughts, but it is the Olympics start tonight. They start like soon. They start in like 3 hours, something like that. But they will be broadcast again tonight. I saw the great Joe Bartage in the hallway, and he just yelled down the hallway at me that they're having a international charcuterie board.
Okay,
that's what he'll be eating before the Olympics. And I told you I am a steak frites man. We like to have the the best meal of that country is. I'm not a great French food eater. I just because they eat every part of the animal, and I can't eat some of that. I've never had enough like good French food to really appreciate. I've been to some fine French dining and had a wonderful time, and I understand how good it is.
Have you done escargot?
I just have a hard time. Yes, I've had escargot.
Did you enjoy it?
I can laugh like a Frenchman. I did enjoy it. I pretty much like everything I've ever had. We went to Montreal for my daughter's graduation and had a phenomenal meal at a place there. And again, Dustin, you've been proud of me. Had a rare steak on the steak frites because of what you got to be careful about different types of meat, and you got to make sure you order it at the proper temperature where, depending on where you're at.
Nobody likes cold poutine.
No, we didn't have
poutine. No, you don't like cold poutine.
No. I don't want poutine anyway.
I tried it because I was like, I was in Quebec
when
for
in
a
Rome,
whole summer.
Right?
I'm going to go ahead
in Quebec.
Yeah. It is, they say that it's a great hangover food.
I believe that because it just kind of.
Cheese and potatoes, and it just like loads you up and. But I'm not a poutine guy.
Now, here's my issue with the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I'm not complaining. I'm just like, it's odd to me. Why do we always have the opening ceremonies and like games have already been going on for a couple of days?
Great point.
Because there's so many games. There's so many things. Like,
but they could just move the opening ceremonies up.
But there's no medals. It's just preliminary kind of games and stuff, and you got to get going. You got to get into your group stage to get into the
medal. Yes, Mully, I understand that, but why can't we just have the opening ceremony before we commence playing games?
I think it's because you don't want the athletes in country for that long a period of time. Like the men's basketball begins on Sunday for the U.S., is that right? Do they play Sunday, I think? So that'll be fun to see. But like, we're sitting here, we got some rugby games on. They're replaying the women's soccer game. We're about to see a couple of crackers of goals here from Mel Swanson.
Yeah.
Former Mel Pugh. It's just fun to have it on.
The
Olympics are in Paris. So
Paris.
But they're playing the basketball in Lille. They're playing the men's soccer in Marseille. Like, these are different cities in France. This is not like the outskirts of Paris. So I think because there are so many venues needed and so many places you have to go that you got to get going, get started.
But then they all have to come back together for the opening ceremony.
Well, yeah, they come back for the opening ceremony. Like the U.S., the men landed in Lille. They did their news conference there. They will be obviously in Paris tonight, but they will be back to play on Sunday in Lille.
Yeah, I guess
if they get to the medal round, that'll all be played in Paris.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's just a preliminary. Got it.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
Pool play and whatnot.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and then, you'll have the, hopefully we'll see.
You know who's not going to be in the gold medal round?
Who's that?
The Cubs and the White Sox.
No. The Cubs and the White Sox are letting us down. Why can't the Cubs win a gold medal? I don't know.
Probably because they eliminated baseball as a sport.
Let's get to the phone lines. We have a lot of people want to check in. 312-644-6767. Our buddy Ron is on the south side. Hey, Ron.
Hey, good morning, guys. Couple of things. Marshall, you said that the White Sox probably should hold Crochet to after the season. But that I disagree with, because there are some teams that are all in to win it this year. And you have the number one trade piece. And the team that I've been mentioning is Baltimore, because Corbin Burns is going to be a free agent this year. See, this is they really have to go at it. The Yankees are struggling with pitching. To me, there's never a time like the present. That's just how I look at it. I don't think the demand will be any better than it is now. There are so many teams that are short of a pitcher. So I did want to say that. But I do think that this position he has taken is going to complicate things. Now I agree. And lastly, Luis Robert, I think gets, and not your mother, I think you said it earlier, may be valuing him a lot more than the league, man. Yes. When you have those constant injuries, they're not going to give up any prospects. And lastly, the reason I mentioned Baltimore, because Steve talked about the three levels of development. Yes. They have shown that they can develop young players. So I've been advocating for them to trade for Baltimore. Yeah. So you all have a great weekend.
And Ron, if they can make a trade with Baltimore, oh my God.
They have talent in the farm, down on the farm?
Hey, Baltimore is looking at J-Mo by all accounts too. Just saying.
Yeah. So
they've got a lot of
talent. To Ron's point, the reason I said what I said about the offseason is because of Crochet taking the stance.
That's exactly
otherwise right. I'd be like, yo, move that man.
Yeah. No. I knew that. I know that you are responding in immediate time to the story as it unfolds. It's changed a little bit this morning than it maybe was yesterday before we read John Heyman's report about what his agents are looking for. And I don't know this to be the case, but couldn't they have gotten another year of service or two from Crochet if they had chosen to go that route, if they wanted to? Because he missed 2 years, I don't know that the Sox ever tried to do anything like that. But it's kind of it's. I wonder how they feel about his agents inserting themselves into this process. Now they might be a little bit miffed about that.
What can they do about it?
Yeah, no. God bless them. There's nothing you can do. Nothing, as you say. Let's get to Theo. He's in River North. Hi, Theo.
Good morning, fellas. You guys are cooking this morning, but you always do. Hey guys, that Coombe interview was really revealing, and I greatly respect his takes. He made two really interesting comments. I'm going to fly through these, and I don't think by any means he knew these were indirect indictments of Counsell and Jed, because I know he loves these guys. But the first thing he said that caught me was he said, "Just look at Milwaukee. They're 11 games up. They're comfortably in first place, but they don't overwhelm you with any great talent or anything. They just get it done: running, hitting, opposite field, small ball, whatever they have to do."
I completely agree with that comment, and I can only deduce that our failure to win with similar talent, maybe even better than Milwaukee, by the back of the card, must fall. It's got to fall clearly on our coaches. It might be motivation, preparation, mindset, whatever, but they have it and we don't. And then, Mully, later on you ask Coombe, how are the Brewers doing what they're doing? And here we are with the manager everyone wanted, and we're not winning. How is that possible? Coombe said, if you look at Milwaukee, they've had a winning formula since 2017.
Right.
And this exact quote was, you just don't lose that. Well, how do you explain the Cubs since 2016? And not, I don't mean the, forget the COVID year in 2020 and the one and done playing games. I don't see any consistent winning formula. So
well,
they seem to have lost it to me.
But they, but since the World Series, they dumped everybody, right? I mean, we know the COVID year kind of led to them making a lot. You know, think about it. They, you know, we talked at the time when they got rid of Yu Darvish that they basically got back, you know, scratch offs. One of those scratch offs ends up being Owen Casey, so that's pretty good. Now we haven't seen him yet. Like to see him. Curious what the guy can do. He's a ginger, but we don't
is that
I'm just saying,
is that a qualifying factor?
I don't think it's a qualifying factor. I think James Trianos might be a ginger too. I think they've got some gingers coming.
You are clearly on ginger watch, and is this a new thing or is this a thing you've always done? Tell me.
I know that a certain dude is a ginger hair genius, so I wonder if there is another form of genius.
Got it.
If there is a baseball genius out there, that might be ginger.
Here's what I know.
Don't the Cubs have a lot of gingers? Am I making that up?
I have not been paying attention.
Is Ian Happ a ginger?
I usually see those guys with the caps on, the caps. I don't really see their hair as much. So I can't speak to that as you can. You clearly are, like I said, on ginger watch, and you're an expert on such things. I know where they are in the standings, and they're below 500, and they need to get above 500 as quickly as possible. And they need, if they want to have any chance, and I'm not saying they do have a great chance, but if they want to have a chance, they need to be above 500 when the month of September starts. That's the starting blocks. If you're below 500 or even at 500 when September starts, it ain't happening. I'm not saying it's over.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it ain't happening unless you do that. And a lot of that will be determined by what happens between now and the trade deadline, obviously. But the Cubs. Yeah. Meanwhile, the White Sox, if you want to, you know, not have the worst record in the modern era, the 162 game era, you might want to win a game or two. And I said it on this very program just a week and a half ago. I said, hey, they would literally have to lose 40 of their last 50 games.
They're on the way, aren't they?
They have not won a game since then. So.
Yes. You put the Malecki on it. I'm blaming you. The evil eye was placed on the White Sox.
That's a 200 winning percentage over the last.
Come on, man. You know, as I said to Stoney, maybe I hadn't taken into account just how.
Losing snowballs?
Yes.
Avalanche?
Yes. You know, I got to tell you, when you're on a winning team. And you, every time you go on the field, you know you're going to win. There's nothing like that feeling. But if things are turning on you and you're not sure what's going to happen or you wonder.
And the confidence is shook.
That's the same thing. Isn't it the same thing? Isn't it like you're in a game, you're watching the Sox and you're thinking, well, how are they going to lose this? I told you the other night, they're down 4-2. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, well, time for me to go to bed. Because they're not coming back. It's two runs. They're not coming. They lost 10-2 in that game. Thank God I pulled the plug on that.
It's like when you guys talk to Tommy Hotovy and we're talking about the Cubs pitchers being able to kind of separate themselves from what the offense is doing.
Yes.
The White Sox pitchers have done a great job of that all season long.
Yeah, they're
starting. Eric Fitty has a 7-3. Yeah. That's
hard to believe.
7-3 record.
Considering how awful the team has been. Yeah, it's amazing. It's quite. Unusual to think about it that way. But, I mean, good God. The White Sox, Yoán Moncada was going to come back, but no, he's not coming back. I don't know if you saw yesterday Frank Thomas and Ozzy.
On the post game?
On the post game.
Oh, my goodness, I did. I watched the whole thing.
After Aloy.
I'm watching the game, like, maybe they'll get a run. Maybe they'll get a run. Maybe they'll get a run.
Oh, yeah. Aloy said before the game, that he basically can't run. You know, he has to be careful about how he runs. They went off on that. Frank basically told him not. Well, let's take a listen.
But here's what he said. I told the Sun-Times this before the game on running. Eloy Jimenez says, right now, I have to be careful. I want to run hard, but I need to be careful. Just try to play the game how I can. So clearly his hamstring's a thing. But, if it, you know, okay. He was trying to get – if his hamstring's a thing, what he needs to do is take the single. You need the base runner there. That's not a smart move.
I might be wrong for you. Or what? Yeah. Okay, I have to be careful. Be careful about what? Hitting four ground balls every night?
Getting hurt again?
No. Here, I understand. I don't want to get hurt again.
Yeah.
But helping the ball club different way?
Mm-hmm.
He's not helping the ball club different way. I agree. You say, yes, you got to be careful. Of course you got to be careful. It comes from big injury. But at the end of the day, get on the line, you do that? Bro, I'm telling you, no chance. No chance. I'm not going to lose my respect in my clubhouse because of that.
This game is about example and energy. Mm-hmm. And players like him that guys look up to, who's supposed to be superstars, it rubs off on the rest of the club. Mm-hmm. If he can't play 100% right now, he can't play 85% right now, he's better off just being injured. I'm telling you right now, you got guys like that hit a shot at the gap and can't get to second base, you stay at first base. Mm-hmm. But inside, I want that double. If you can't get that double, you stay at first base. But that's leading by example. So the rest of that clubhouse, what happens? Everybody lays back down. You know, it's like, I hate to bring up the word, it's like cancer in the clubhouse right now. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys are losing so much, they think they can't win anymore.
Now,
I mean,
that
Frank
is very passionate, powerful stuff.
And it was measured, too, because...
Well, he went off the day before,
yeah,
so maybe he was being more careful.
But, like, with Frank Thomas specifically, as you know, how his career started, the guy is a former tight end who could run, and then he got to the point where he couldn't run, so he knew when to pull up.
His first 7 years were as good as any in baseball.
Yes. So when he's talking about hitting one to the gap and knowing whether or not you can make it to second, he's speaking from literal experience. Not only that, but if you saw the replay of Eloy on that play that they're talking about, man, all you can do is roll your eyes or bow your head or walk out of the room or maybe throw something at your television. I would say you could do something at the game.
What do you think of the idea you're better off not playing than doing that?
It's accurate. Like, if you can't give it You're complaining about your limitations, but yet you're not playing to your strengths.
Yeah.
Like, you got a base hit. Leave it at that. Let them pinch run for you, which is exactly what they would have done if he had been at first base. But instead, he kind of halfway goes to first base running and then tries to turn it on the way to second and is a sitting duck sliding into second.
Am I the only one that will be hugely disappointed if they don't have a trade done by the time we reconvene on Monday?
Yes, because they've got more time than that.
I want them to get to something. Do something.
No, I would rather wait to the last minute and get the right deal done.
I think the problem is that I want them to trade about seven people.
Okay.
And if they're waiting till the last minute, then they're not going to get...
That's fair.
They're not going to get anything
so
done.
So Paul DeJong has moved over the weekend. You'll be happy with that.
Why not?
Tommy Pham.
Why not?
Happy with that.
Tommy Pham, we kind of know what that will
doesn't
be.
Doesn't have to be the biggest trade ship.
No. So that's, why not?
That's for the proverbial scratch-off that you spoke of.
There you
of.
Go. That's all.
It's Tommy Pham.
Yeah, I love Tommy Pham. I think he's – I tell you what, you know who could use Tommy Pham is the Cubs.
He's a fighter.
He's a tough guy.
He's
he
a fighter.
Plays hard. He plays good baseball. He's a tough guy.
Based on what you just said, the way you now I'm thinking about before I was just thinking Crochet or Fetty or Luis Robert Jr. But there's lots of other players who can be moved.
There are a lot of guys to move. That's what I'm saying. They've got if you're trading Michael Kopech, what are you waiting for?
You're just making me
go
remember.
Ahead.
All you're doing right now is making me remember what Steve Stone just told us about if they've passed away recently. Whoever they want to bring up.
There you go.
Like they could get rid of seven players, everybody be cool because they can't really do worse than what they've been doing.
If the White Sox break out into a game of Weekend at Bernie's, no one's gonna be upset. Maybe no one notices.
Yeah. Especially now that they're home. Like you might notice on the road because there's people in the stands, but at home I'm sure they've got some kind of promotions and they're gonna draw. But I need to see what the get in price is for the White Sox tonight. Like, what would you imagine is the get-in price for the White Sox tonight?
I mean, I'm sure you can
Five American dollars.
Yeah.
$5? $5. Okay, let's see. I'm just going to use StubHub.
There you go.
I'm going to say the get-in price for tonight, Mariners in town. The Mariners team that's, by the way, lost three in a row and two and eight in their last 10. Looks like the get-in price is $10.
Oh, wow. There you go.
I see $8, too.
You see $8? Okay. Okay. Well, $8.
Oh, you were wrong, Dustin. You owe us $3.
Mark that down.
Sure, it'll be the only time Dustin is wrong in the near future.
All right. We've got Dan and Lawrence. He asked, hopefully. Yes! Dan and Lawrence will join us next. It's Mully and Haw. It's Marshall Harris on the score.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Nore Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nore Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nore.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.